Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. John Sheen grew up in Massachusetts, but a pursuit of a degree in American history led him to Duke University in North Carolina. It was there where he discovered Piedmont blues and had the good fortune to spend some time playing in Big Boy Henry's backing band. Those influences never left him and are very evident on his latest album, Restless Soul Syndrome, scheduled for April 2024 release. John is our guest on this edition of Americana Music Profiles.
Hi, John. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. I believe you are in North Carolina, right?
I'm in Durham, North Carolina.
All right.
Yep.
But not home originally, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Massachusetts in the town of Haverhill, which is, if you've ever heard of Haverhill, that's the same place.
Okay.
Yep. So... but I moved down here for college and have stayed ever since.
Yeah. Well, you picked a good place to stay.
Well, once you get down here and you're in the middle of January, February or something, and you have one of those 70 degree days,
right.
It's kind of hard not to want to stay.
That's right. So. Yeah. So growing up in Massachusetts, what was the thing that got you interested in music?
That's a good question. I guess, you know, my dad was kind of a child of the 1950s, I guess, you know.
Yep.
So he was like the first rock and roll generation, you know. And so when we were listening to the radio in the car, we were always listening to the format that used to be known as the Golden Oldies.
Yep.
Which is like the music of the 50s and the early 60s.
Right.
So... you know, and then he would be like quizzing me, like, who's this? Is it Roy Orbison? Yep, that's right, you know. And so I that was kind of our first real music. And it's just so, that music was so melodic and so wonderful.
Yeah.
And including and through the Motown era, too.
Oh, sure.
You know,
yeah.
And so it's like growing up in Massachusetts, there really wasn't a presence for country music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I never heard Johnny Cash until I was probably 18 years old, you know?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Very different from like my friends who grew up in the South with country, you know? So really like I probably heard a lot more kind of rhythm and blues and, mm-hmm. and Motown stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I that was on the radio a lot up there. So
I guess some of that's Northern Soul. Did that get reached that far up to Massachusetts area?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. A lot of that was recorded in Detroit and, you know, Philadelphia, places like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if culturally people in the South might have divided along racial lines of what they were listening to more.
Right, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hard to know. I mean, we did not have a station that played the Grand Ole Opry or anything like that.
Right, sure. Okay.
You know, it just didn't. That was something I had never heard of.
Interesting.
But by the time I came south, I knew a decent amount of like blues artists and stuff, and then when I got to North Carolina and realized that some of these older black blues players were still alive and playing around
here. The Piedmont.
It was really eye opening. And by the time I was like maybe a sophomore in college, I started to back up a guy named Big Boy Henry, who was from Beaufort, North Carolina. And so that was just a really cool experience to be like 19 or 20 and playing with somebody who was like in their 60s, you know.
Now, that didn't happen by accident. Where were you at this point with your music that got you into the position to be able to do that? That's really cool to be your age and be able to sit under the feet of some artists like that.
Yeah. Well, so there was a guy here in Durham named Slewfoot. He was kind of generation between us.
Yeah.
He would have been in his, late 30s or something, which to me was an old man at the time. But he was the blues DJ on WXDU in Durham.
Yeah.
And he saw my college band play.
Okay.
And we had a little bit of that blues and garage kind of sound. And he was like, I'm going to get these guys, make them my backup band.
Oh, okay, and, cool.
And so he made us his backup band. And he was like, here's Howlin' Wolf, here's Sonny Boy Williamson, here's Muddy Waters, here's John Lee Hooker. Just listen to this stuff and learn it, you know?
Wow. Had you known some of that stuff before he did that?
I was familiar with it, but I didn't probably know it in the, you know, like all the songs and the different sounds and, you know, but at the same time, I was really exploring the fingerstyle acoustic thing. And though I wasn't playing it with that group, I was playing mostly electric guitar back then. And, you know, I think I just kind of more embraced the acoustic from about age 21 on.
Yeah. So you know, you were in school for some sort of academic study. Did you pursue that or did you just go straight into music?
So I was at Duke and I was a history major.
Okay.
And I tried to do like a project where like I could work on a film about the blues and it didn't end up happening. And I was just like, okay, I'm just going to finish this up. And I actually like buckled down and got done with the degree a little bit early and finished up and then kind of went straight into playing.
Okay.
So the band that I was in at the time, it was like an offshoot of that other band and it was just me and a bass player. And we were kind of doing this kind of acoustic guitar and bass, like Hot Tuna kind of thing. And somebody heard us and he was like, I'm starting a label. I'd like to sign you guys.
Wow, that's cool.
And it was like, I don't think I was even 21, you know, and we were like, and we knew nothing.
Yeah.
So we were like, I guess this means we're staying in North Carolina, you know, and I guess we're now going to become famous or something, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. Wow.
And, so of course it took like a couple of years to make the first record. But you know, I basically haven't looked back since then.
Okay. And kind of more or less pursued it as a full-time venture.
Yeah. I mean, it was a full-time venture, even without full-time pay, you know?
Yeah, right. Do whatever you got to do, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we were touring a lot. And after the duo expanded to become a trio and then a quartet, and then the quartet had a truck and a loan and a giant PA system. And it was just like the bills, and the more we played, the more it costs to run the band, it seems, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we were working as hard as we could. And in a time period too where no email, you know.
Yeah, right.
If you wanted to get a gig, you had to call the club.
Right. Yeah.
The club had like usually there was no website.
Yeah.
You know,
guerrilla marketing, posters on the light poles, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So you called the club and you got an answering machine that said, "We take booking calls on Tuesdays from 11 to 2.
Right.
So then you'd be in the van and you'd be like, "Hey, pull over. I have to use a payphone to call this club because so we would routinely spend $300 a month on the phone bill.
Mm, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It was just, yeah. Wow.
Just, yeah. Nobody told us how to do it. We just kind of just applied ourselves. Wow. You know?
Yeah. So at some point, I think I read that you that dissolved or you drifted away and kind of pushed into some solo stuff, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I got tired of like bands changing the name and having to kind of start over.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I was like, oh, I'm just going to use my own name.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And so I guess the first record that I put out under my record was in 99.
Okay.
Which seems like a long time ago.
It is a while, yeah.
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 And we made a couple of CDs, and then we came to attention of this really amazing drummer from England named Dave Maddox. Mm. And Dave was a member of the Fairport Convention, had played with Jethro Tull, XTC, like the list kind of goes on.
Wow, and that's cool.
He's currently touring with Richard Thompson.
Mm.
But he had moved to Massachusetts and through a stroke of luck, like moved in next door to some old family friends. And he heard my music and he ended up offering to produce us.
Hmm.
And so took him up on that and he produced two albums. And really the music kind of went to another level. And my partner on bass, FJ Ventry, the two of us really paid attention to what they were doing up there. And we kind of learned how to make records in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you've made quite a few, right? I was looking at your music list and it looks like you've done this a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of try to keep learning as we go and we've branched out now to be producers for other people too.
Oh, right. Okay. That's cool.
So, which really takes some of the pressure off of having to play all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you were, I was already teaching guitar, so it was a pretty natural move to start helping people record too.
Sure. Yeah. So how often do you get to go out on the road still, or do you still have a pretty healthy schedule?
Yeah. I mean, it changes, you know, time to time, because I, at this point in my career, I kind of don't take certain gigs, you know, like I don't play bars anymore. And I'm trying to play better rooms.
Right.
And so we do okay with the teaching and the producing. So it's like, if a good, opportunity is in front of us, we will jump on it, but we're not just out there to play hundreds of shows. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
So, but I think I probably play 80 to 100 a year.
Oh, well, that's plenty. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's plenty.
mostly in the southern region, or are you spreading out pretty good?
Yeah. So I mostly play the northeast and southeast.
Mm-hmm.
Usually go out to the Midwest once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing some teaching at guitar camps these days.
Yeah.
And so I've got one this summer that will be like a week in California, and there's one that'll be like a week in Alaska.
Cool.
And
okay.
So, you know, I do get around, but as far as the driving gigs, usually just the East Coast.
And is it mostly just you and your bass player, or do you try to take a whole band out when you go?
We generally either solo or duo.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In April, I'm actually going to be touring up north with Bill Newton, who's a harmonica player.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And yeah. He features a lot on this new record. And Bill and FJ and I had a trio called the John Shane Trio. And we used to play as a trio quite a lot. And then Bill took some time away from it. And so really after about maybe 10 years, he's kind of coming back around to playing more gigs with me.
And you mentioned the new record. We haven't we have not mentioned that yet. Restless Soul Syndrome. And that comes out in a week or so from where we're talking, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited. I've gotten really good feedback on it from the people who I've played it for.
Okay.
And, you know, we did a Kickstarter, so I know a lot of different fans have heard it, and they've told me really nice things. But you never quite know how it's going to be, you know, how it's going to be accepted by the public at large, you know. So
in line with your similar style of music, have you kind of settled into this as your identity sound?
Well, there's always a little bit of the fingerstyle blues involved.
Mm-hmm.
But I have quite a wide range of tastes, and so that creeps in too. There's a few tunes on the new record that have like kind of a Latin percussion kind of sound to it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some more Americana kind of stuff. Like the very first tune on the record, I think, is what I would call straight up the middle Americana.
Mm-hmm.
Little bit of slide guitar, a little bit of harmonica thrown in, harmony vocals, the whole, you know, works.
Yeah.
And we did a cover of a Traveling Wilburys tune on the record, which I think people will enjoy.
Yeah, that's cool.
We took, you know, the tune, The End of the Line.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So we made it into a Cajun tune.
Oh, that's cool.
And put like fiddles on it and stuff.
All
right. A la tout va bien. Like kind of like sing it in French and stuff. It's pretty fun.
That's cool. So when you're putting together your original material, are you creating with a theme in mind, or do you, when you get enough songs together, it's time to record again? How does that process work for you?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because probably everybody you ask that question would have a different answer.
Probably so. I haven't heard a similar one yet.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in my writing, I usually, like, if there's words that are of interest to me, whether I'm in the car or just at home or whatever, I just scribble them down. And then anytime I'm noodling on the guitar and I come up with something that's kind of even vaguely interesting,
mm-hmm.
I press record on my telephone.
Okay.
And so after a while, I have a bunch of snippets of music and a bunch of snippets of words.
Mm.
And then I usually start seeing if any of them fit together,
mm-hmm.
which is, I know, a weird thing, because a lot of people, they probably like, they work on a tune at a time,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they probably try to write the whole thing in a day or something,
yeah.
you know? But mine sometimes develop over like a long time.
Yeah.
So if I need some words to a piece of music, I may look into a notebook from 5 years ago,
okay,
and see if there's something still in there that looks good that hasn't been mined yet.
Yeah,
you know,
that's cool.
So I take the pressure off of myself that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I don't need to finish tunes immediately.
Right. Yeah.
But I also do a lot of like co-writing and helping with the people that I produce.
Oh,
so
sure.
I feel like I'm kind of constantly have my hands in that
mm-hmm.
jar
mm-hmm.
of writing.
Yeah.
So
the new record, Restless Soul Syndrome, I think you tell me is officially release date April 9th. Is that right?
Yep.
Yep. And that will be available. How can folks get that from you?
Yeah. If you want an actual copy of the CD, you can go to johnshain.com, which is JohnShain.com. And I'm actually already selling some on that before it comes out.
Okay.
Just for fans, you sure. know, like send signed copies and things, but it'll be, released to all the streaming sites, on April 9th, like Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, Tidal, whatever right. people are okay. listening to these days.
And I presume that they can reach you personally through the website.
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thanks, John. It's been fun talking to you, and I'm a big fan of the Piedmont Blues, so I'm going to go back and I think your publicist just sent the full album over, so I'm going to go back and listen to some of the other tunes, and especially since we've talked about a couple of them, so looking forward to doing that, and wish you the best with it, and thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Will, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.